to this meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. For the record, today is Thursday, April 19th, 2007, and members present are Senators Bundy, Davis, Ellis, and Stevens. Appreciate you all being with us today. We have three important items before us, and we'll take them in this order. First, Senate Bill 102, Mortgage Lending, by Senator Huggins. Senate Bill 107, relating to the scope of practice of naturopaths, by Senator Davis. And Senate Bill 140, Leave for Bone Marrow Donations, by Senator Elton. I know there are a number of folks to testify, so we're going to try and get through this expeditiously, give everyone their chance. This will be the first public hearing on all three of these important bills. The plan would be to take the public testimony and any requests for information and discussion, hold the bills over, and then to move them at a upcoming meeting. I'm not sure whether it will be the next meeting, but there will be full public notice of our impending action. Are there any questions or comments before we get started? If not, Mr. Owen, I'm going to ask you to come to the table on Senate Bill 102. That's the bill before us at this time. Mr. Owen will walk us through the committee substitute that's in our packets for the bill. And following that, we'll have a presentation from Mr. Mark Davis, the Division of Banking and Securities. Mr. Owen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dana Owen. I am an aide to Senator Ellis on the staff to this committee. I am afraid I'm going to have to respectfully demur on walking you through the CS. I just got it late yesterday afternoon. It's a very complicated bill. It's 35 pages long. And what I've just given to you, and you should each have a copy now, is a copy of the CS provided to us by the sponsor of Senate Bill 102, and a sectional analysis, which was originally written for the House versions of these bills, and a short form of that same sectional analysis. Mark Davis, the division director, is here to explain the bill to you in greater detail and also to go over with you the changes between the original bill and the sectional analysis that I've just passed out. Just to make it clear, I've notated on the tops of these that the CS that you have is identical to the current House version, which passed out of House Labor and Commerce yesterday afternoon. And the sponsor has asked us to take up that version of the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Owen. Didn't mean to overstate what you were going to do, but thank you for updating us. Let's have Mr. Davis come forward then at this time. Mr. Davis, if you can, good afternoon. If you can give us your full name and your title, and then take us through the issue. I understand that Senator Huggins and his staff will not be present, that they've asked you to sort of present and carry the bill. I understand Senator Huggins introduced this by request, so I guess the burden is on your shoulders.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm the Director of Banking and Securities with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. If I could, I'd like to briefly go over the structure of the bill and then go through the changes in the CS. That last year, you had before you SB 272, which is a slightly different bill, so I explain this bill. This bill proposes to license all components of the industry, which are mortgage bankers, mortgage brokers, and mortgage originators. What it states is that an originator must work for one of the other licensees, and that the mortgage bankers or mortgage brokers must work through an originator. The originator is the person in this industry who meets with the consumer, sits down with them, and goes over their proposal to get a mortgage. An important component, then, is continuing education under 06-6160, which hasn't changed in either version, to require the persons in the industry, those originators who meet with the consumer, to be aware of Alaska law and to be aware of federal law. It has a series of prohibitions in it. For example, the bill in 06-6320 prohibits false advertising. It also requires, importantly, compliance with federal mortgage law. Presently, 10 federal statutes apply to mortgages, but there is limited enforcement by the federal agency. And I don't mean to be critical of the federal agency. They're big and they're busy. What's been happening throughout state law recently is for state law to adopt those federal standards and then examine for compliance with those federal laws. One you may be familiar with is the Truth in Lending Act. Another one would be the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act of 1974. And I noted on December 8th, 2006, Maine, the state of Maine, had commissioned a predatory lending task force. And after several months of investigation, one of their major conclusions was that Maine should enforce or examine for RESPA, or the Real Estate Settlement Act. And we've already got that in our bill. So the idea is that we would examine mortgage brokers, mortgage licensees, and originators for compliance not only with the provisions of this statute, but also with those important federal statutes. It also has prohibitions and in Section 350 for certain refinancing prohibitions, but it also is clear that the bill does not affect the remedies that are already available via the Attorney General under the Alaska Consumer Protection Act. We've been working in conjunction with the Department of Law on our comments on this bill, and we've made changes which are reflecting the CS, which they wanted. But essentially, what the bill says is that there is still a private right of action under the Consumer Protection Act or to the Attorney General, which provides for either treble damages or restitution. So this is a licensing bill that has certain prohibitions in it, but it doesn't prohibit those consumer protection actions. And the Consumer Protection section of law has done mortgage cases already under that act. So if I could get to the CS, essentially we put in an exemption for anyone who's already licensed under Alaska's Small Loan Act. The idea here is that we're not trying to double up on regulation. If you're regulated under another licensing scheme, that's fine. But we also modified the federal exemptions. You'll see there's a series of exemptions. Some of them are designed to prevent, to allow, I'm sorry, nonprofit housing organizations to help people with their mortgages without being licensed. But also there's an exemption for certain federal subsidiaries of federal banks or the banks themselves or state banks. With regard to state banks, my division examines state banks and their mortgage activities already. The federal government has taken the position that it should examine any federal bank and any subsidiary of a federal bank that does mortgage lending. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled on Tuesday that any subsidiary or operating subsidiary of a federal bank that engages in mortgage lending would not be subject to any state regulation. And I think the bill tracks that. We had followed the rule of law of the Ninth Circuit at the time we drafted this bill, and essentially the Supreme Court affirmed the Ninth Circuit opinion. The only issue open under that bill is that in that case the Supreme Court said under Bailey-Leach Act that an affiliate of a bank that is engaged in insurance and securities would be subject to state regulation. What it didn't say is whether an affiliate of a bank that engages in banking activities and other activities would be subject to preemption. Then we changed the bill so that we could deny an originator's license if they had previously violated the chapter. That was a good call by law, so that if someone has been already violated, we can prevent them coming in, or we can look to another state. And that situation has occurred in Alaska, where originators have been hired who have lost their licenses in another state, mm-hmm. and have unfortunately moved our state in order to stay in business.
And on that point, how does this, if this bill were adopted, how does that,
how do we protect ourselves?
It
allows for a background check of mm-hmm. licensees, and we would check their criminal backgrounds and also check their licensing status. This bill does is bring us more in line with securities law, where in my division with securities, we check broker-dealers and or investment advisors with their licensing in other states when they apply to be licensed in our state.
Okay.
And we check them to make sure they're legitimate.
Thank
we
you.
Don't. We don't, and that, we propose doing the same thing here to check
okay.
them out.
Okay.
We've also said that that the mortgage broker or mortgage bankers would be responsible for things they knew or should have known about the conduct of the originators, so they can't point the finger and say, "I didn't know the originator was having people sign blank documents." These are allegations that we hear that appraisals that are way above what the property is worth, or statements of income of the potential borrower, which are more than they make.
Mm-hmm.
And there's patterns there. There's patterns where everybody who applies has an income of six figures. And if you see that kind of pattern, we're saying that a mortgage broker or mortgage banker could be responsible for turning a blind eye to that conduct. Also, we've put in a criminal provision, which we didn't have before, in 370 to make them Class A misdemeanors for certain violations, which we think gives the statute teeth. And we've also defined escrow that you must have a written instructions. There's been some concern about handling of escrows in the mortgage industry here in Alaska, and the Department of Law and I concur that the change in 995D will tighten that up. So that's essentially an overview of the changes made in the CS. There are many, many technical changes, like I said, over 100 changes, mainly lawyers using different drafting styles.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Are there comments or questions at this point from the committee? A question to you, Mr. Owen. The sectional analysis that the members have, is that a sectional analysis drawn to the committee substitute?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So we do have a sectional that follows the committee substitute. Okay. So again, anything for Mr. Davis? Senator Bundy?
Thank you. I've heard some of the complaints, and apparently there's some more mortgage originators with some substantial criminal records. My question is there anyone in opposition to what seems like a good idea of tightening up these regulations?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, I believe that, and they will testify, an organization called AFSA wants to have a partial exemption for their originators. Those are companies that usually either operate in Alaska or through call centers. An example would be Countrywide. Another one would be Primera. And they're suggesting that we not license their originators, but the parent company get a license, and then they would be responsible for the actions of the originator. Questions arise about how they would be given a background check and how they would follow continuing education. And we've been in discussions with them. This is an industry bill, though, I'd point out, not an administration bill. So I also would defer slightly to the rest of the industry. The Alaska industry is supporting the bill. I also have been told that AARP has some concerns about the bill, and I can certainly address those. Yeah. Basically, the bill provides for restitution, despite what the AARP letter states. If a licensee has been revoked and they want to be reinstated, we could order restitution. Additionally, the Attorney General, if we refer a case to the Attorney General, would have a right of restitution. So there are restitution provisions in the bill. The surety fund is not an exclusive remedy. That is, you can still sue with private counsel. And my belief would be that it would be much like real estate. I used to be in private practice. If it's a major case and the person you're suing has money, you pursue your remedies. If it's not, you might go to the realty surety fund to do the best you could. The surety fund is designed to be a stopgap thing to make sure somebody gets some money out of a bad situation. By making the mortgage brokers and mortgage bankers liable for conduct possibly of an originator, though, that also provides another deep pocket, which didn't exist before, which I think is a good reform. It's like a lawyer being responsible for the conduct of their paralegal. You know, if they're practicing law without a license and you kind of know about it, well, mm-hmm. You're going to be in trouble. The other issue AARP had was wondering why we had that referral to the Attorney General, saying that it looked like, you know, the Attorney General can only bring a case if we make a referral. That's not how I read it. Why I wanted to adopt that, and that's based on Minnesota law, is that if we didn't have the right of referral, then my division would be stuck with the remedies in the law. And I wanted the ability, if I think something's really serious, not a standard case, to be able to say this case should be handled by the Attorney General with the full powers of the Consumer Protection Act and or restitution.
Yeah. And Mr. Davis, we're going to get to the AARP letter and their testimony here in a moment. So if you could hold that, we'll let you come back
but
on those points.
That is
Senator Bundy, were you, did you?
No, that answered
okay.
My question. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
What's the problem with escrows, and what are you tightening up on? What are you changing? What is the difficulty there that you're facing?
Well, I think there's been concern about whether there are written instructions in every escrow agreement in the mortgage industry. Traditionally, an escrow agreement at law is one where the parties have agreed to give the money to a third party with written instructions. When the following events occur, the money will be dispersed. And we just want to make sure that there are written instructions that the consumer knows that, if, say, we're escrowing for a roof repair or whatever they are, that we know how long it's going to be and when the monies will be released or not released and to whom. And there's been some allegations that has not been occurring. Again, because I can't investigate right now, I can only tell you what I'm getting on my predatory lending hotline.
Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up on a different issue, can you talk about internet? Will this have an impact on internet loans, mortgages? Will you be controlling that as well, out-of-state companies?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, that's an excellent question. This bill proposes doing just that. We passed 2 years ago an act that regulates so-called payday lenders or deferred deposit companies, and we put in that bill a provision that licenses interstate companies. We have been successful to date in licensing interstate companies. We had one interstate company initially challenge us and then agree to abide by the act. All the rest of the internet companies are doing so, and we've also been able to collect approximately $700,000 in restitution for some of Alaska's poorest consumers through the provisions in that act, many of whom are internet lenders. So this bill is patterned on that, follows the same language.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
Mr. Davis, back on the comment you made about Countrywide and the outside, the big outside firms, what is your position as division director on their proposal for partial licensing and taking responsibility for their underlings?
I have not formulated a final position. I've talked to them, and they've asked to talk to me. But again, my position would be to make sure that we can protect consumers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're going to have to think about that and ask you to think about it more, because we'll be looking to your recommendation, not to take out of hand, but to consider as an expert and someone who's looking out for Alaskans' interests. So please think about that, because we will have to make a decision, policy decision, at some point.
AFSA has asked to have a teleconference with my staff and the Department of Law on Monday, and we've agreed to that.
Okay.
And we'll, I think they're going to propose, I'm not sure, I don't want to speak for them, I think they may propose language. And so we've set it up, and we'll certainly look at it.
Okay. And the bill will be held over, so we've got a little bit of time, but not that much.
I understand.
If we're going to achieve this year.
And the decision by the U.S. Supreme Court does clarify some of this, which is excellent. I mean, it came out this week, and we were able to respond to it.
Yeah, the timing is working well. Anything further for Mr. Davis at this point? If not, Mr. Davis, if you could just shift over to that chair. I wanted to go, since the AARP letter came up, I believe you all received it in your offices. We've made another copy available here as part of the committee file. So, Ms. Darlin, if you could come on up for AARP. If you could go through the letter, the main points in the letter for us, and then we're going to let Mr. Davis, he started responding to some of the points, but I wanted you to present the letter first, and then we'll get his comments on each point.
Welcome. My name is Marie Darlin. I'm the volunteer coordinator for AARP Capital City Task Force here. And you do have a letter from us which raised several points of concern that we had regarding the original bill. And, of course, we haven't seen the committee substitute either to know what changes were made, but it sounds like some of our concerns were addressed in that, I hope.
We will get you a copy of that, because I would want to know from you what – which of your concerns were addressed and which are still outstanding?
Well, and I do think this letter even is considerable, and I really don't want to spend a lot of time going through it other than to say that our concerns are from the point of the consumer, and wanted to point those things out that we felt were maybe omissions in the bill related to consumer protection as well, and yet Mr. Davis has already commented on a couple of those. So I don't know that it's necessary for me to really go through the letter.
Okay.
Other than to say that most of our concerns are from that of a consumer. Okay. And so, I'm sure that they'll be addressing some of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, one thing we were wondering was the statute of limitations being only 2 years. And again, that we believe that the bill could offer more really consumer protection than what it does. So I won't go into a lot of it, because I said some of it he has already shown that they're looking at it. Okay. And then we would then also have our attorney, who looks at all of our consumer issues for us, go over this again.
Okay.
To see what they're feeling about it. I don't feel qualified to
that's fine.
Look at 36 pages and say,
no, it's fine. We've got to have the cell phones on vibrate. But sorry to interrupt you, Ms. Darlin.
No, but that's our main concerns.
Okay. If I could ask you to send the committee, we'll get you the committee substitute. If you could send it to your AARP advisor, attorney, and we'll work with committee staff to determine which of your concerns have been addressed, and if so adequately, in the committee substitute. You know me, if there's a reasonable chance to strengthen consumer protection in whatever legislation, I'm always looking for that opportunity. So if there's a reasonable way to do that, I think we would consider it and see if the committee supports that. So thank you for being with us and for your letter. Mr. Davis, is there anything about the letter that you didn't respond to in your previous testimony? If you'd like to go ahead on the AARP issues, and then we'll move on to the other folks.
First, just briefly, to preface my remarks, the committee may not know that my division and AARP are currently engaged in providing 13 seminars throughout the state on investor education, so I want to point out that we work daily with AARP.
Mm-hmm. Good. We appreciate that.
In fact, I was lecturing there before I came down here on securities law. I think basically what we've got is a licensing law, in my opinion, and AARP is looking at a predatory lending law. Despite some of these things we've just discussed before, our view is that we would like at some point to have a predatory lending law. The way I would structure such a law would be to have the people who provide financial services or offer securities to the consumer to be already licensed. Unfortunately, in Alaska right now, money transmitters, mortgage companies, mortgage originators, and people like check cashers, a lot of people aren't licensed. The way most predatory lending laws work is if you have a license, you're under that licensing system and follow that law, or you're under the Predatory Lending Act. And that's what I'd like to see. So I think this is a little premature. The other thing is, do you want to put a predatory lending in a Mortgage Regulation Act? New Jersey did that and actually got a poor rating from FISHT, the mortgage and bonding company, for a while, and then had to put in amendments. So, but I do understand that there is predatory lending going out there. One of the things we lecture with AARP right now is on reversed mortgages, which are a real issue. Mm-hmm. Just like variable annuities are in the security world. There are these new hybrid products.
Okay. So, Mr. Davis, if I could ask you to do this, if you could put your a response to the AARP letter in writing, and I understand you wanting to keep some of these issues separate and maybe do a separate piece of legislation, but if there are reasonable pro-consumer changes, consumer protection changes that can be reasonably made in this bill, I would like the committee to be able to consider those. So if it's completely outside the scope, maybe we save it for another day. But if there are things we can do to strengthen your hand and the consumer's hand in this bill, under this title, I'd want to consider that. Not to hold up the bill, but to just do the best job we can.
And just to comment on that real quickly, when we got AARP's letter, we looked at the issue of restitution. It's in the bill twice. Question is, should it be in there as a separate item? I talked to the Department of Law this morning because I need to coordinate with them. But I think law and I have agreed to put a restitution order provision in Section 870, and that would be one way I would respond to AARP.
Okay, excellent. So we're making progress. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Let's go now to the Senator Stevens.
Mr. Davis, maybe I have this wrong, but are you suggesting that when we talk in the AARP letter, they're talking about civil penalties capping at $10,000? Is this the proper place to cap civil penalties, or is that also in a predatory lending law that should take place?
These would be licensing violations, and that $10,000 is very similar to what we have in the Uniform Securities Act. That is, if you so the idea of this bill you have before you is that if it's more than a licensing issue, like the kind of case that one case is under federal investigation right now, that kind of case would be referred to the Attorney General, and the bill carves out the ability of the Attorney General to bring the full panoply of his powers or her powers against those perpetrators. Or to coordinate with the FBI, which we already do. And it's a lot like the Securities Act.
If there are things that fall out of this discussion that aren't appropriate for inclusion in this bill, I'd ask you maybe at some future time to come back before the committee with some suggestions of other tune-ups to the state statute.
Correct. We would be very happy to do that. Two years ago, we set up the Predatory Lending Task Force and hotline in my division.
Right.
And we've been trying to work on that, and we've developed a slight database about what the current scams and problems are.
Okay. So we'll do the good work we can in this title, and if there's more work undone, we can discuss that later.
I appreciate the offer by this.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Let's go quickly to we're running out of time for this meeting today, and I want to get to everybody. So I'm going to have to ask people to keep their remarks short. We're open to written testimony for the file. First is Danielle Fagra Arlo.
Hi there.
Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead quickly.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the record. My name is Danielle Fagra Arlo, and I'm the Senior Vice President for State Government Affairs for the American Financial Services Association, known as AFSA. Thank you sincerely on behalf of AFSA and our members for this opportunity. And also, we want to especially thank Mr. Davis and the department for the work that he has put into helping us work out the language on this bill. We truly appreciate it, and he's been a delight to work with. As you can, as we all know, he's very intelligent, and he's helped us learn some things, and we hope we've tried to communicate our position to him as much as we can as well. We look forward to continuing to work with him. AFSA is a national trade association based in Washington, D.C. Our members come from financial services firms that provide credit for consumers and small businesses. Our 350 members include consumer and commercial finance companies, vehicle finance and leasing companies, credit card issuers, industrial banks, and most important to this group, mortgage lenders. Mortgage lending members of AFSA who serve would-be homeowners in Alaska continue to have some concerns about SB 102. We hope to resolve the remaining issues promptly. We note that the Senate passed a bill last year that we were completely comfortable with. By working with the department this year, we have agreed to a concept whereby lenders themselves would be regulated, but the employees and exclusive agents of multi-state large mortgage lenders would not be licensed individually. Our primary concern with the bill relates to the licensing of individual employees and exclusive agents of large multi-state mortgage companies. As it stands, this language will significantly increase the burden on lenders, regulators, and consumers. Licensing of large multi-state mortgage lenders can impose substantial costs and administrative burdens for both lenders and regulators. In a lender's case, of course, these costs are passed on to the borrowers in the form of fees. In the case of regulators, the added burden could well have a negative effect on compliance activities. Licensing individual employees of large multi-state mortgage lenders or their exclusive representatives can impose substantial costs and administrative burdens. For example, expanding the scope of mortgage loan originator licensing regulation to cover the employees and exclusive representatives of a licensed mortgage lender in the state, like collections personnel, call center employees, and loan processors or underwriters, and others who speak to customers in the process of completing a loan, is unnecessary. Regulators can also be negatively affected by the added administrative burdens, as we discussed. Large mortgage lenders, as licensed entities, as we hope they would be in Alaska, have programs and policies in place for pre-employment screening, background checks, in-house training, education, and compliance to meet state requirements for their employees and exclusive representatives. These programs and policies help prevent fraud or other criminal activity and facilitate enforcement capability by the department. Large mortgage lenders do not oppose licensing for loan originators who work on behalf of independent mortgage brokers to find and negotiate loans for borrowers. A mortgage broker is generally considered to be an independent person or specialty company who shops loans to different lenders for the borrower. A mortgage lender underwrites and or funds the loan and is responsible for the credit risk of the loan. Large mortgage lenders are very different from independent mortgage brokers in various ways. For example, they typically operate as licensed entities in multiple states, have large numbers of employees who interact with customers from many states on a daily basis. They're very well capitalized. They carry huge reputational risks associated with employee misconduct, and they may be affiliated with or a subsidiary of an entity regulated by the Federal Reserve Board. Sensible state licensing of lending companies themselves renders the need to license individual employees unnecessary, and it is our proposed solution in the substitution language we have prepared and will continue to work with the department on until they are satisfied. In conclusion, I want to thank you for your time and assure you that AFSA and its members' continued commitment to working with you as we seek to balance consumer protection with credit access for the people of Alaska. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. Are there questions or comments from the committee? If not, thank you for being with us today, and we wish you well in that conference call meeting with Mr. Davis.
Thank you.
Let's move quickly to John Carman in Anchorage.
Hello. My name is John Carman. I am the, I guess, chairman of the Legislative Committee of the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association. I've been working on this bill for, or trying to get a bill for about 8 years now. And I think it's interesting to note that I think the industry in Alaska has been working to try to get a bill. They've been working to try to be regulated, which is probably different than most industries in the state. Currently, the Alaska Mortgage Bankers, the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers, represent by far the majority of loans originated in the state of Alaska. Our members include Alaska USA Mortgage, Wells Fargo, First National, GMAC, Residential Mortgage, and Homestate, as well as many other small brokers. We've been working on this issue for many years, and last year this bill went through over 27 revisions trying to make it perfect before it was finally passed in the Senate 19-1 and then died at the last minute in the House. Last year's bill only called for company licensing without a provision for individual licensing. However, it was always our intention to pursue individual licensing this year and add it to the bill. Since the bill was delayed, we are now adding that provision at the request of our members, and I think the Division of Banking would like to see this provision there. I can tell you the bill's not yet perfect in anyone's mind. You're always going to have people changing it. We're now on version O of this bill, even though we went through 27 versions last year. But the fact that we've gotten all the diverse groups in Alaska, from small mortgage brokers to major mortgage lenders, to agree as far as we are, I think says a lot for the bill. I find the people that are working to still change the bill are, in many cases, really trying to kill the bill. I think they fall into one of two categories. Well-intentioned people that are late to the process and do not realize how many times every word in this bill has been argued and debated, and that adding any additional words to the bill just adds more arguing and debate over exactly what that provision means. When you add things at the late hour, it goes back into the black hole of legislative drafting and never seems to get done. We only have 3 weeks left in the session, and currently we're in a state with zero regulation. I agree with more consumer protection, but at this point we have zero consumer protection, and we need to get a bill in place that would fund the Division of Banking to hire more people to enforce existing laws that are already out there. The other group of people are bad-intentioned people that maybe have a criminal record or for some other reason will find it difficult to do business under this new bill. Every day we see bad lending practices in Alaska, some through lack of knowledge, which will be helped through the continuing education, some through lack of ethics, which will be helped through enforcement through the Division of Banking. The purchase of a home is a major thing. Everybody else in the home inspection process is licensed. Realtors, home inspectors, appraisers, title insurance company, hazard insurance companies, and even surveyors. But today, there are a number of convicted felons that hold themselves out as lenders. A realtor lost her license for life to practice real estate for falsifying a tax return for a customer that was applying for a loan. She's now a lender because there's no restriction on her activities in lending. Speaking of large national banks, recently it's well known and in the paper that an individual that worked for one of these entities that is supposedly well regulated and watched was convicted by in the federal courts for banking fraud. This person had already had their license pulled in another state. If we had had this licensing law in place, this person would not have been able to practice in Alaska. There's no question this legislation provides strong consumer protection against abuses in mortgage lending. It gives the Alaska Division of Banking and Securities enforcement ability in an area that it currently does not have any. The enforcement of the act will be self-funded with fees paid by licensees and $10 per loan fee for each residential transactions paid by borrowers. In addition to being applicable to our members, it will also be applicable to the out-of-state internet lenders that we have been advised are a major source of complaints to the Division of Banking. Although the Act will necessarily put some restrictions on the business freedom that small independent lenders have enjoyed, this bill is not so onerous as to place an undue regulatory burden on lenders who treat borrowers in a fair and ethical manner. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carman. The next witness is John Martin. I should note that Roger Prince signed up to answer questions if necessary. Mr. Martin, are you there?
I am. Thank you.
Please go ahead as quickly as you can.
Hi. I appreciate the opportunity to give testimony on the bill today. I'd like to give you a little background information so that you better understand my views. I've been a resident of the state since 1959, went to school here, and served in the National Guard. Since 1977, I've been involved in the real estate industry. I have been a real estate broker, investor, and developer. For the last 20 years, I have been in the mortgage loan business. I've been a mortgage loan originator, manager in charge of production of one of Alaska's largest lenders, as well as the manager in charge of all their branch offices. I'm a member of the Predatory Lending Task Force in Anchorage, representing the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers. I sit on their advisory board, and I'm on their education and legislative committees. Presently, I'm the owner of a small mortgage company and have two originators working with me. I'm a founding member and past president of the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers and served as a committee chair for membership, and presently am a member of the legislative committee. In addition, I'm president-elect of the Western Regional Mortgage Broker Lenders Conference, which is an organization of 14 Western states that puts on an educational program each year for people in the mortgage loan industry to receive education, get up-to-date information from national leading experts, and have a face-to-face expo with the nation's top mortgage lenders. This event has over 4,000 attendees with over 300 exhibitors. So as you can see from this information, I'm a longtime Alaskan with deep ties to our state. As such, I'm very interested in the long-term care of the mortgage industry in Alaska. To that end, I was part of a small group of people that wanted to start an organization to promote professionalism, high ethics, and licensing of the mortgage industry in Alaska. We organized and started the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers, which is an affiliate of the National Association of Mortgage Brokers, because they believe in the same things that we do and have the same goals. More importantly, NAM has a code of ethics that all must adhere to in order to become a member, as well as professional designations that can be earned through their educational classes. Their highest educational designation, their certified mortgage consultant, is presently held by one person in Alaska, and you're talking to him. Alaska is the last state to license mortgage operations. The people that work here in this state day in and day out and interface with the public recognize the need for this type of legislation. Just looking at the local news media in the last year, we can see that our great state is not exempt from unscrupulous operators. While we know a lot of the problem is a result of out-of-state operations, a few people here have chosen to try and take advantage of our state, and I've sent some enclosures down for the committee to look at. Many people have worked hard and put in lots of unpaid hours to come up with a bill that makes sense and at the same time does not put undue hardship on small business. These are your local people that live and work here in Alaska. They don't really want to be licensed, but it's pretty obvious to us that it's in the best interest of our Alaskan consumers for us to be licensed. Licensure would clearly put everyone on an even playing field. Background checks, competency testing, continuing education will go a long way towards serving the public. And because those would be administered by the state, it would be equal all the way around and would not be subject to a company-wide interpretation of what's a good background check and what isn't. Everybody would have to meet the same standards. The licensure of mortgage entities clearly gives the state the powers needed to protect our state. Along with the licensure of mortgage loan originators, the state will have the power of accountability directly with the person who interfaces with the general public, with the ability to revoke a license if necessary. Now, that's accountability. There's been a little bit of smoke and mirrors about the bill. We're only talking about licensing originators. It has nothing to do with underwriters, shippers, processors, clerks, or anyone else. So it's real important that we license the originator, because once they're licensed by the state and go through the standards and accountability that they're going to have to go to, if they get fired from one company and try to go to work for another company, they're going to have a problem, because the state will be in control of that license and will have the hammer. Many other professions associated with the real estate industry are already licensed by our state. Some have written letters of support for this legislation and recognize the necessity for this legislation. And a few of them are the Mat-Su Home Builders, Home Inspectors of Alaska, Independent Brokers Association of Real Estate Brokers in Alaska, and the American Land Title Association, Alaska Chapter. Since we helped with the most recent changes in the bill for the new CS, we recommend that the committee adopt the new CS so we can protect our Alaskan consumers. And with that, I conclude my remarks, and I would entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. I don't see any questions at this time. I note that Julia Coster has, from the Department of Law, has signed up and available for questions. And our final witness on this bill at this time is Joe Brammer. Mr. Brammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And if you can be, if you can be,
for affording me the opportunity to present my public testimony today on Senate Bill 102, I will make certain to make my comments very brief.
Thank you.
My name is Joe Brammer, and I am a mortgage loan originator. I also chair the Legislative Committee on behalf of the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers. I've been working with consumers in Alaska since 1992 by helping them obtain financing for the home of their dreams. I originated my very first mortgage loan in 1980. My purpose before you today is threefold. First, I'd like to provide you with a brief amount of recent history surrounding the development of this legislation. Secondly, I'd like to address the issue of competency testing. And finally, I'd like to share my views on continuing education requirements. Nobody likes additional regulations being imposed that they must abide by. This is especially true of the mortgage industry, as we currently have no state regulations. As one can pick up the Anchorage Daily News and easily ascertain, this lack of regulation has contributed to unscrupulous operators preying on the consumers of Alaska. Nothing can be done currently to stop these predators. Enter Senate Bill 102. This piece of consumer protection legislation was drafted in conjunction with industry representatives from the Alaska Association of Mortgage Brokers and the Alaska Mortgage Bankers Association, along with various state departments. This consumer protection legislation provides safeguards for the public and enforceable penalties for violators. It requires the licensing of mortgage companies and, more importantly, mortgage loan originators. The way it is right now, you can be peddling used cars yesterday and be a mortgage loan originator today. No training, no education, no accountability, no competency requirements. I say no way. But it's true. These mortgage loan originators are the individuals who meet with the consumers, your constituents, and advise them on the single largest purchase they will ever make, their family's home. In addition, they negotiate contracts that commit the consumer to typically their family's largest monthly expense, their mortgage payment. Before a loan originator can be eligible for licensing under Senate Bill 102, they'll be required to pass a competency test, as you'll see on page 5, line 24 of this bill. The passing of a competency test prior to dealing with the public is a critical component of protecting the public. In addition, the loan originator will be required to attend and complete continuing education requirements as outlined on page 15, line 19. This is a vital ingredient in this consumer protection legislation, as our industry is under constant change. If we look at other professions, such as insurance agents or those individuals offering securities, real estate brokers or licensees, we find that state regulations exist for pre-licensing testing and the completion of continuing education prior to license renewal. Mortgage professionals are no different. In closing, Senate Bill 102 is a consumer protection bill designed to level the playing field in the industry, protect consumers from unscrupulous and predatory lenders, and it provides enforcement mechanisms and penalties for violators. Your approval of Senate Bill 102 is paralleled by Neil Armstrong's first walk on the moon, in that this is one small vote for you, but a giant leap for consumer protection in our great state of Alaska. Thank you.
Mr. Brammer, thank you very much for your time and being with us today. Is there anyone further to testify on this bill today? I do want to note for the record before we hold the bill over that as soon as I received a request from the sponsor, we scheduled this bill up for a hearing. It was to have been before this committee this past Tuesday, but at the sponsor's request, we held it over till today. So if Mr. Carman and others are experiencing some frustration, we appreciate his years of effort here, but we're going to take the time to do a good job on this bill. There's plenty of time for this bill to pass this legislature. The Senate did its job last year and had a very strong, near unanimous vote on the floor of the Senate and passed it over. So we will do a good job again this year. But I just wanted to note that, this committee has responded to the request of the sponsor in the requests to schedule it and then to delay it. But we will have this bill back before us this coming Tuesday. We hope to take action at this time. I'd ask Mr. Davis and the outside organization to have their teleconference and to make some recommendations to us. Folks should study up on the committee substitute, and we'll have the bill back before us Tuesday. So the bill is held over at this time. Thank you all for being with us on Senate Bill 102. Let's move quickly to Senate Bill 107 by Senator Davis, naturopaths, scope of practice. Mr. Obermeyer, if you could join us, please, and make the initial presentation of the bill. I hope to get through the public testimony on this bill. And I'd like to note that Senate Bill 140 by Senator Elton, leave for bone marrow donations. We've informed his staff that that bill will be back before us at a later time. But we're going to run out of time today. So, Mr. Obermeyer, please go right ahead.
Senate Bill 107 is an act relating to naturopaths and to naturopathic practice, establishing a naturopathic advisory committee and an Alaska Naturopathic Formulary Council, amending the duties of the State Medical Board and the Board of Pharmacy relating to the naturopathic practice and providing an effective date. And excuse me, I am Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself.
Thank you.
For purposes of expanding the allowed procedures and regulating the growing practice of naturopathic medicine in Alaska, Senate Bill 107 establishes required licensing fees, a naturopathic advisory committee, and an Alaska Naturopathic Formulary Council. The three-member advisory committee is to be comprised of three licensed naturopaths and is appointed by the Commissioner of Commerce. The advisory committee is responsible for selecting the formulary council and reviewing allegations of member misconduct. The Alaska Naturopathic Formulary Council is to include three naturopaths, one medical doctor or osteopath, and one pharmacist appointed by the respective boards to approve certain drugs to be prescribed by naturopaths and to authorize prescription endorsements to qualified naturopaths. While the State Medical Board licenses osteopaths, podiatrists, physician assistants, intensive care and paramedics, and foreign medical graduates, the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development licenses naturopathic applicants who have graduated from one of the four accredited schools of naturopathy in the United States and one of the two schools in Canada. Applicants must also have passed the naturopathic physician's licensing examination. New naturopathic procedures under Senate Bill 107 allows minor surgery, including operative, electrical, and other methods of repair to superficial lacerations and abrasions or lesions, and removal of foreign bodies and superficial tissues. The bill also allows naturopaths to use antiseptics and local anesthetics in connection with allowed procedures. The law prohibits naturopaths from performing major surgery and spinal and general anesthetics. There are 13 states which license naturopaths, and 9 have instituted formulary laws. The states include Alaska, of course, Arizona, Connecticut, Hawaii, Idaho, Kansas, Maine, Montana, New Hampshire, Oregon, Utah, Vermont, and Washington. Currently, there are only 40 national pass practicing in Alaska, 802 in Washington, 715 in Oregon, 375 in Arizona, 210 in Connecticut, 117 in Vermont, 85 in Hawaii, 67 in Montana, 57 in New Hampshire, and 27 in Maine, 18 in Utah, and 11 in Kansas, which was just started licensing in 2003, and 8 in Idaho. While the scope of practice of naturopathic doctors varies from state to state, almost all deal to some extent with prescribing drugs. I've explained that 9 of those states allow naturopaths to prescribe independently without any MD supervision or protocol, but they usually have some type of designated drugs that are permitted. Arizona has the broadest formulary in the nation, allowing naturopaths to prescribe all but IV medications, controlled substances except morphine, which is allowed, cancer chemotherapeutics, and antipsychotic drugs. Kansas, which instituted licensure in 2003, requires MD supervision, and Maine requires collaboration with a physician for 1 year prior to independent prescribing. Naturopathic doctors focus on preventative care and in keeping with patients in keeping patients healthy, and they usually rely much less than MDs on the use of drugs. Patients often turn to naturopathic doctors when traditional medicine has failed. One of the reasons naturopaths require formulary or prescribing law is to reduce the amount of combination of drugs patients are taking. Senate Bill 107 is designed to reasonably expand the services of naturopathic doctors only to areas collateral to the needs of their daily practice without infringing on the duties and responsibilities of medical doctors licensed by the state medical board. Finally, as a comment, this is not the first time this type of bill has come up. It was also before the Senate in Senate Bill 306 in the last legislature. It went through several revisions. Result was a task force that was to address it. The Alaska State Medical Board, which has just sent a letter, indicated that they don't think that process was complete, but this process is to try to put some type of regulation over the practice and discipline of this group of naturopathic doctors.
Okay. Mr. Obermeyer, thank you very much. Are there questions or comments? If not, if you could just take a seat over here. We have 6 folks to get through in the next 30 minutes, and we'll be holding the bill over at that time. First is Mary Miner. Mary's talked to me about this legislation for quite some time over the years. Please come forward.
Yeah.
If you could just state your name and affiliation again for the record, and please go ahead.
I'm going to hand these out so that you...
Well, our staff will. Speed up your testimony there.
My name is Mary Miner. I'm a naturopath practicing in Anchorage, Alaska. I've been practicing for 23 years, and since 1990, I've been practicing in Anchorage. I'm going to address the educational requirements for naturopaths and how they compare with other licensed healthcare professionals in the state of Alaska. I'm going to first I'd like to have you take a look at Appendix E in the white paper. It's a comparison of the curricula of National College, Bastyr College, Southwest. Those are all 3 naturopathic colleges, John Hopkins, Yale, and Stanford. You can see that the basic science, basic clinical education is similar across the board. There are differences in the allopathic and the naturopathic strength in the clinical applications. Obviously, naturopaths do a lot more with botanical medicine, naturopathic philosophy, oriental medicine, those sorts of things are not included in the allopathic school. The total number of hours of education is fairly similar. I'd also like to also, I have a comparison. Can I have you hand these out? Sorry. I don't.
That's okay. That's what he's supposed to do.
Okay. Basically, of the licensed professionals who are able to use prescription medications at this time, include nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, medical doctors, and not in Alaska, but in most other states that license naturopaths, we have that. I wanted to, this is a comparison of the background education. For the comparison of the UW Medical School and the Bastyr School, this is based on a head-to-head study that was conducted in 2005, 2 years ago. You can see that the prerequisites to get in are fairly similar. The education once they're in school is also quite similar. And while there is a difference in focus, our focus being more wellness orientation, it's certainly within the scope of practice of most licensed NDs to use prescription medications, particularly legend drugs, which are not controlled substances. And so we're looking to expand our licensing to fit our training and so that we can also have that available for our patients.
Ms. Miner, thank you very much for your presentation. Are there questions or comments? If not at this time, thank you for being with us. Let's move on to Gary Ferguson. Mr. Ferguson, please come forward. And following Mr. Ferguson will be Emily Kane. So if she could be ready. Mr. Ferguson, please go ahead.
Great. Thank you, Chairman Ellis and Senators Davis and Stevens. I'm Dr. Gary Ferguson. I'm a naturopathic physician, and I practice in the Eastern Aleutian region of the state. And I practiced with them for 5 years. I also represent the Alaska Association of Naturopathic Physicians as their Alaska Native liaison. My primary work is with the Alaska Native population, although I do work for Eastern Aleutian Tribes Community Health Centers. So a lot of the population that I serve are the underserved population, and a population that has huge health disparities. So my focus of the last 5 years has been in diabetes and diabetes management, working with Indian Health Service, Alaska Native Medical Center, and our communities and helping make them healthier for our people. I'm originally from the Eastern Aleutians. I'm from Sandpoint in the Shumagin Islands, and so I'm feeling very privileged to come back and serve the people from my region. An area that comes up as far as a challenge as I practice in the Aleutians is many of our communities are remote and often have a very limited practitioner base. I often tag team with nurse practitioners, our primary base as far as healthcare providers, and I'll sometimes PAs, and we do have medical doctors that come and do rounds maybe twice a year, maybe once a year from the Alaska Native Medical Center doing services to our region. It's still often not enough as far as in good management and healthcare. The villages that I serve every 3 to 4 months, nine of them in the Aleutian region, we do great work, and it's an integrative team. We work as a team, and currently, as far as if I need a medication altered or changed, which often happens when you have patients do lifestyle changes, which, you know, we exercise, we change our nutrition status, we get better sleep, so on. As naturopaths, that's our fundamental basis is lifestyle and counseling and motivational interviewing. However, often when lifestyle changes are effective, medications need to be changed, and hypertensive medications often need to be reduced. If they're on diabetic medications, those need to be changed, as well as maybe insulin doses. And this is a challenge. Often a patient will present to me, and since I cannot prescribe them, I'll have to have them have separate appointments, and sometimes patients can get lost in the shuffle. And so this is an area, as far as patient safety is concerned, I feel, having graduated from National College of Naturopathic Medicine 2001, was trained with pharmacology and pharmacokinetics of drugs and using prescriptive authority based upon Oregon statutes. I did have a DEA license when I practiced in Oregon, and my primary focus there was also, again, a population with great health health disparities, homeless population primarily. Medications, pharmaceutical drugs are often needed to help bring these patients into balance, and they're one of the tools that we use. I consider them like kind of like the stilch in our pipe wrench. They're great tools, and they can stop that pipe from rupturing, but they can also have the potential for great harm. And so I use prescription medicines very judiciously when I prescribed in Oregon. We often, as naturopaths, use torque wrench style approaches. We use lifestyle, and we use botanical medicine. We use nutritional approaches to help people achieve balance and wellness in their life. So my main tools are torque wrenches, and I love those, and I also use Chinese medicine, and I will be using acupuncture with patients. But often I will need to employ a pharmaceutical drug, an antibiotic. A patient presents with diabetes and they have a urinary tract infection. Well, maybe an antibiotic is the best approach for them. They live in a remote village. We don't want to have them be a life flight into Anchorage because of complications due to a bacterial infection. So sometimes the drugs need to be used judiciously. And currently I've been able to finagle with my nurse practitioner colleagues ways to get the patients the care that they need. This bill would allow us to practice more within the scope of the way we're trained and licensed as naturopathic doctors. And so I support this bill based upon our Association of Naturopathic Physicians as well as my work in the Aleutians. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ferguson. We appreciate you being here. I think you presented to the Health Caucus a while back and enjoyed your PowerPoint. Thank you very much. Emily Kane, and then Scott Looper. Ms. Kane?
I'm Dr. Emily Kane. I'm graduated from an accredited naturopathic school in 1992, and I've been practicing in Juneau for nearly 15 years. I've had hospital privileges with our local hospital, Bartlett Regional Hospital, for over a decade. And what has been presented so far in support of this bill are the ideas of comparable training, our education, ideas of expanding access of primary health care providers, which we are in the state of Alaska, which is underserved. And I'd like to bring up an issue that would be of great interest to this committee, which is of consumer safety. So Appendix K of our white paper, which was the background for the bill, and Mr. Obermeier, thank you for your succinct review of the how the bill got written. I appreciate that. Appendix K, on the first page, you'll see, is everybody on Appendix K? There, you'll see that in the years 2000 to 2003, there were, in various states, the number of disciplinary reports. They're listed here as disciplinary actions, complaints. They're not necessarily situations that result in legal ramifications, but just any kind of disciplinary report. And you'll see that in the state of Alaska for the years 2000 to 2003, there were zero disciplinary actions taken. I'd like to focus a little bit further on the state of Arizona, which during these years had approximately 370 licensed naturopathic physicians, and there were seven disciplinary actions. If you look on the next page, which breaks down the state of Arizona a little bit further in those years, we can look and see that the number of what's pertinent about looking at Arizona is that they have had prescriptive rights. Naturopathic physicians have had prescriptive rights in Arizona since the late 1980s. Is that what we decided? 89. Okay. And so during these years, naturopaths had access to prescription drug writing, and there were seven total disciplinary actions out of the 370 or so doctors. Whereas in the single year of 2003, the medical doctors had a total of 101 disciplinary actions. And if you do the number crunching, it adds up to about twice as many disciplinary actions for medical doctors as for naturopathic physicians, who were essentially functioning in a similar capacity with full access to the complete toolbox. So I'm pointing that out. It's feasible that in Alaska, zero disciplinary actions for the years surveyed relates to not having access to prescription medication. I want to be really clear about that. Prescription drugs, you have to know what you're doing. They have a much higher side effect profile, and that's why we get training. We are one of the aspects of the bill ensures that our continuing education in staying abreast of changes in pharmaceutical practices, and also proving through testing or some kind of a class, a 60-hour class, I believe is what's written up in the bill, or some kind of a grandfathering in through some kind of a comprehensive test to ensure that we prove that we are able to manage prescription medication. So it's not... NDs aren't, we're not raring to start writing prescriptions. That's really not what we're about. Our foundation is guiding people in making lifestyle changes that are going to enhance safely their long-term well-being. But as Gary mentioned, sometimes the best thing they need is the short-term 6 months on a beta blocker until they lose the weight or start walking or whatever it is that they need to do. And so we want to be able to provide the best that we can for our patients within the scope of our practice.
Thank you, Dr. Kane. Are there questions?
Just a brief
Senator
question,
Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I understand the document we're looking at in K. Is that just disciplinary actions on prescription misuse?
No. It's any kind of someone calls up and it's any kind of disciplinary action that would have been registered through the, for here it would be occupational licensing. So occupational licensing, or in other states they might have boards, keep track of any consumer complaints that are filed. So it's not exclusive to prescription drug use.
Thank you.
Dr. Kane, the bill was referred to our committee because of scope of practice issues, but also because of workforce development. And the American or the Alaska Medical Association has written in opposition to the bill and says that the legislature should spend its time expanding training programs and the WAMI slots, which we did this year. We doubled the WAMI programs at UW Medical School, but trying to expand the cadre of medical doctors, many of whom are retiring of a certain age. And you all, I suppose, would argue that they're doctors of naturopathic medicine that can help fill that need in our state, do fill that need every day in our state, and that you're a class of medical providers that can expand. Do you just have any quick comments for us on that point?
I think
workforce development is one of the reasons this bill came to our committee.
Absolutely, and it's fantastic that you've expanded the WAMI slots. I think that's absolutely wonderful. And Dr. Miner has been practicing for 23 years. I've been in practice for 15 years. We are established in our communities. I have nearly 4,000 charts. We are here. We are practicing as primary care family doctors. I see patients of all ages with many different types of complaints, and I would be more useful to my large patient base immediately. These new WAMI doctors that are coming up, great. We're going to need those. I'm glad that that's going to happen. But I don't think that it's not a either or situation.
Right. Okay.
Thank you,
Senator Stevens, on that point, another
point.
Feel
sure.
Free.
I understood Mr. Ferguson's argument, saying that he's in a very remote area where there are few doctors, few hospitals, few clinics, and nobody there to prescribe medication. But that's not the case here in Juneau. There's lots of people who can prescribe medication. So what's the rationale for providing you that opportunity when you have lots of opportunities available to you here in Juneau?
That's a very good question. I make referrals frequently. I'm well embedded in the medical community here, and any medical doctor who's been here for more than a decade can attest to that. However, sometimes it takes a long time to get into them. Sometimes the patient needs the antibiotic right now, or they're just not going to go to the medical doctor. They're different. People have different flavors of the kind of, it's a freedom of choice in healthcare issue in part. And so if I have a patient with congestive heart failure, needs to get on some diuretics or heart controlling medications short term or even longer term, and I say, well, I'm so sorry, but you're going to have to go sign up and get established at Valley Medical, and that may or may not happen. That patient might fall through the cracks, or it may take them several weeks to be able to get in. So it's certainly there are plenty of medical doctors here, but nevertheless, on the whole, Alaskans are underserved. And so we're just proposing, since we're trained and we're available, we're established, we're providing the patient care, we certainly have more training than nurse practitioners who already have prescriptive rights. Just bring us up to line. It's kind of bringing us in line with all the other Western states who license naturopaths. They all provide prescriptive rights to their docs.
Important question, good answer.
Thank you.
Okay, Scott Looper, followed by Patricia Anderson, and then Rick Urien. Right. Scott, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Please go ahead quickly. We have 11 minutes left.
Okay. Let me just say that my name is Scott Looper, and that I'm a practicing physician, a naturopathic physician in Fairbanks, and I am speaking in support of Senate Bill 107. I'm sorry I can't be there in person, but I'm attending a medical conference in Portland, Oregon. I do want to say the reason why we're here doing this. And the main reason is we want to provide the best quality care to our patients that we can. The fact is, as Dr. Kane had mentioned earlier, there are situations where it's to the patient's best interest that they receive a prescription, an antibiotic or diuretic or something like that. And the fact is that naturopathic physicians are trained to prescribe when needed within the context of the practice of naturopathic medicine. Now, the most important point here is that we want to provide quality care. What we want to be able to do is be able to use the tools that we're trained to use to provide that quality care. And occasionally it does come across, or the situation does occur, where it's appropriate to use some sort of controlled substance. It's as if of the wide variety of tools that we're trained to use, some of them are locked away. And it's frustrating as a physician not to be able to access those tools. Like Dr. Ferguson, I also had a DEA license in Oregon and in Arizona, so I'm used to being able to use those tools on occasion. I do want to say something else, too, about how this is done, how the right to prescribe is typically allowed or earned. And that right goes like this. What you do is you attend classes where you learn how to use the appropriate tools, how to use prescription medications. Then you move on to a clinic situation where, under the supervision of practicing doctors, licensed doctors, you practice using those in appropriate situations. After that, you go on and take a national board exam. And if you pass that national board exam, you then become, you get the right to be able to get licensing. You earn the right to be able to get licensing. Well, here in Alaska, we do every step of that process with the exception of the licensing piece. Frankly, it's just not fair that we would go through all those steps and not be able to use that, especially in view of the health and safety of our patients. The fact of the matter is it is inconvenient for our patients to have to go see another doctor when we're trained in the appropriate use of those medications. Many times it's more expense, or it's, as Dr. Kane says, it's simply difficult to go to another physician because the physicians are not available, or they're busy, or the time is odd, maybe a weekend, so on and so forth. It's those patient situations that drive this process for me personally. It's when I have to sit across from a patient and say, no, I can't prescribe what you need right now because of the way the law is. And they say, Dr. Looper, can't you do something to change that? And that's why I'm speaking to you today. And I appreciate the opportunity to do so.
Dr. Looper, thank you for being with us. Do you think the lack of prescriptive authority under the current Alaska statute is any kind of barrier to more naturopathic practitioners locating to Alaska?
You know, I don't know. I can't answer that question. The fact of the matter is most naturopathic doctors don't prescribe much. When I did have the right to prescribe in the two states, Oregon and Arizona, I only wrote a script once every week or two. It wasn't, and most of the time I actually took people off of things. So it's not something that limits my ability to help people. I help people all the time. I've been in the state for almost 7 years now. But it does create a certain frustration on the part of a physician knowing that you're going to be moving to a state that you can't do some basic things like thyroid hormone replacement. It's such a normal thing to do in someone whose thyroid isn't working right. And, you know, there's certainly an obstacle there.
Okay. Thank you again. Next, Patricia Anderson.
Yes, hi, this is Patricia Anderson.
Please go ahead. We have about 6 minutes left and one other witness after you. So.
Okay, thank you. I am calling from Anchorage. I am a patient of a naturopathic doctor here, have been for over 7 years as a result of my third bout of breast cancer. I went to the naturopathic doctor, and he worked with my oncologist so that making my chemotherapy less uncomfortable for me. He had extensive experience with cancer care. After I finished my chemotherapy, I ended up on Arimidex, which is a bone loss type medicine, and he's been able to help me get the right exact type of calcium that's, you know, calcium is recommended, but you have to have the right absorption type of calcium to keep the bone loss minimal. And I recognize my doctor as my primary physician. He is even listed on my health directive as my primary physician to be able to make end-of-life decisions with my family. I mean, I'm in support of SB 107, even though I haven't had need for, you know, the regular prescriptions. I need to know that since he is my physician, that I could get prescriptions and care, that I don't have to go find another regular physician. I'm done with all the specialists that I've had to have over the cancer treatments and surgeries and other checkups that I went all just to specialists. So when they finally tell you after 5 years, you now can go back into getting a general practitioner, I felt that I needed to be with my naturopath who has my full knowledge of my cancer background and knows what I need to be taking to support any results from that cancer treatment. So I'm just saying that I am in support of SB 107, and hopefully he can prescribe and whatever minor things that I can go to him for so I don't have to go find another doctor.
Ms. Anderson, thank you for being with us and sharing your experience and your consumer perspective. I think it was helpful.
Thank you.
We appreciate you being with us. Okay, Mr. Urien, come on forward. If you could just identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Rick Urien. I'm the director of the Division of Corporations, Business and Professional Licensing. And for the sake of full disclosure here, I'd like to disclose that in a previous life, I lobbied for the State Medical Society and was instrumental in writing the first law that allowed for the licensing of naturopaths in the state of Alaska. I don't remember what year that was, but it's been some time back. Anyhow, today I represent the administration, and we are neutral on the this fact of whether you want to expand the practice of naturopaths. That's up to your wisdom. But we do have some opinions on the two committees that are formed by the bill before you. It appears that we're forming a board here without calling it a board. And if you look here, boards are formed and people are appointed by the governor. Here you have a board or a committee that's appointed by the commissioner of commerce, and I think you might want to change that. You also, if you're going to form a board, you might want to put a member of the public on that like we have on other boards. You also have a committee that's the what's it called? That's the advisory committee. It's really really a board because they talk about disciplinary actions. That's what boards do. Mm-hmm. The members of the naturopathic the formulary council. Your wording in the bill says it consists of three members. It should say consists of five members, three of which are naturopaths. One's a physician, and one is for a clarification point of view. And I'd also like to point out, from what I heard here earlier today, that existing law makes it illegal for naturopaths to call themselves physicians. Mm. Yeah.
So, Mr. Urien, just to clarify, you're asking for the bill sponsor and the committee to consider making the language more conventional to comport with the way the boards are set up for other professions.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it just appears that we are forming a board, whether they want to call it a board or not. That's what we are forming here with three naturopaths, and our boards consist of members of the profession and a member of the public. And that's probably what this should say. It should call, you should call it a board because that's what they are. They're to deal with misconduct and things like that, and that's what boards do.
Okay.
And it's the governor who appoints these people, not the association, with all due respect to the naturopaths, not their group. They don't get to pick them or choose. It's they get to throw out the names.
The others don't.
The others.
They can make recommendations.
They can make recommendations, but you don't get to pick them.
And okay. Well, it's a good learning process. I mean,
yes. So.
Thank you, Mr. Urien. If you could shift over here. Mr. Obermeyer, could you come back to the table? I guess I'll put you on the spot and just say, in the drafting of the legislation, was there, maybe these were requests from the naturopathic practitioners, is there a reason the bill was drafted in a way that's different than all the other boards that Mr. Urien regulates, or what was your what was the thinking there?
Well, the initial question, of course, came up as whether this type of practice would be regulated by the Department of Commerce, or rather by the State Medical Board. That had been a matter that had come before the other committees and the other bills, which were considerably different. They wound up winding up with a recommendation of a task force, which was indicated wasn't completed in your own document from the State Medical Board today. But basically, the concept here was that they wanted to have some type. They felt they were criticized harshly in the last legislature. They wanted to have some type of control. It's indicated in your documentation that that even in perhaps even in Arizona or in some of these other places, the medical doctors might find that it would be difficult for them to have control and maybe. And maybe have a an insurance problem. The few physicians who they say in this document that I left with you from California that was in January of 07, the few physicians willing and well-trained for ND supervision are having difficulty getting malpractice coverage. There are so many issues involved here. I don't have the answers for it. I do know that that this group of naturopaths is and there are only 40 in this state are looking for a way for to be recognized in their profession, to expand their practice to minor procedures, and also to have an opportunity to be regulated, even if it's in their own group. Presumably they would want to keep malpractice out of their profession. So whether this is the proper wording or not, or the exact wording for a final bill, I don't know.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, so let me make a request there with yourself and Senator Davis, the sponsor, to have a conversation with Mr. Urien. We'll have this bill back before us next week. We'll let you know whether it'll be Tuesday or Thursday. There may be a way to draft that portion of the bill that comports more with standard operating procedure.
Yeah,
Senator
we
Davis.
Would be glad to do that.
Okay.
Because I have several questions I need to ask of Mr. Urien.
Okay.
I know the way the present boards are done, and I can understand why the group came back and said they were trying to go a different route, because they ran into such a complex situation last time.
Right.
And we want to make sure that we do what's going to help move this board along, bill along, and we'll be willing to do those.
Right.
Those things that's necessary.
And the reference to the that the other medical folks are making to the task force, that was the thing that Senator Seekins was involved with that some say didn't complete its work. Were there any recommendations or any work product that came from that effort, or did it just dissolve away?
I have no knowledge of the work product in looking through the committee notes.
Okay.
The state, of course, the State Medical Board explained that they did not believe that the naturopaths were as well trained or educated. That, of course, there's no residency program in this type of thing. For the most part, there are some residents, but these issues have been raised before, and I think this group is willing to address them as necessary in order to have some type of regulation that everyone agrees with.
Okay, well, we have a game plan then. To
thank you so much for hearing.
You're welcome. To have a meeting, and we'll have the bill back before us. As soon as we can get those things resolved in a committee substitute for our consideration. Okay, just a quick announcement before. So the bill is held over for further consideration. I do want to announce that we'll be bringing Senate Bill 120, that's the unemployment insurance bill sponsored by this committee, next Tuesday, just for the purpose of assigning it to a subcommittee. I'll be involved in the subcommittee. I'm looking for other volunteers. Okay. Anyone on the full committee can participate on the subcommittee if you so choose. We're planning a work session next week, probably Thursday, to bring stakeholders together. We're going to treat the work of the subcommittee as kind of a working group with all the stakeholders. We will publicly notice all those meetings. Everybody's welcome. And we'll anticipate at least one more such work session before the bill comes back before the committee. So I'm meeting with a bunch of business groups and labor groups. We're going to referee a conversation, and everybody's welcome, and we'll let you know the details next week. Is there any further business to come before us today? If not, at 3:04 in the afternoon, we are adjourned.